Good afternoon, and thank you all for coming, and I want to thank the organizers for putting this together. It's my pleasure to be here today to talk to you about the effects of thiamethoxam that we found on spider mite abundance in cotton. As many of you know, neonicotinoids have a new mode of action. They're fairly new pesticides. They're based in structure on the nicotine. And imidacloprid here was the first one developed in 1991 in thiamethoxam with a structure right here by Syngenta in 1998. The important part of this chemical is this part here that is thought to closely talk, if you will, to the acetylcholine receptors of insects. So neonicotinoids, primarily because of their chemical structure, have many benefits. They make a very good first impression. They have reduced environmental impact. They have low toxicity to mammals, reduced applicator exposure because they can be applied as soil drenches or soil and trunk injections and seed treatments. And they have a systemic action, so only insects that are actually feeding or in direct contact with the plant sap would be exposed to imidacloprid or other neonicotinoids. They have a really long residual activity, and we've seen them active in trees up to 2 years, and potted shrubs also up to 2 years, which is remarkable for an insecticide. And they're highly efficacious against a wide range of economically important pests. But like everything else in life, if it sounds too good to be true, it is. And I know this is a cotton conference and a cotton talk, but I did my dissertation on trees and shrubs, and I can't resist telling the story and showing a couple pictures of trees. This slide comes from a research we did in Central Park in New York, the last great stand of American elm. The culprit here is Tetranychus shoni, the spider mite that attacks elms. We did a study where we followed a group of trees for 3 years. These trees have been treated with imidacloprid to eradicate Asian longhorn beetle. And let me tell you about the graph here. The abundance of T. shoni on y-axis and three sampling years right here. The imidacloprid trees are in gray bars and untreated trees in black. So as you can see, every year we came back there to count the mites. The mites on the trees treated with imidacloprid were significantly more abundant. Every year we went back and sampled. Not all of my study sites were as glamorous, and this comes from a campus at University of Maryland where I did my work. These are boxwood plants and boxwood mites here at Tetranychus boxi. And as you can see again, this is just for 1 year, but we saw this every year I went back and sampled. The mites on shrubs treated with the pesticide were significantly more abundant. So this phenomenon seems to be widespread in different mites and in different plant systems. So it was only natural for me when I came to work with Mickey Eubanks at Texas A&M to figure out if this phenomenon increased spider mite abundance happens in cotton and a different neonicotinoid insecticide, thiamethoxam. So this is one of my objectives while I'm there, figure out if spider mites erupt on cotton treated with the pesticide both in the greenhouse and in the field. And this work is done in collaboration with Dr. David Kearns. Another one of our objectives is to compare structure of arthropod communities between these thiamethoxam and untreated cotton sites. And this is sort of a personal favorite of mine, examine the physiology and genetic changes in plants that come in contact with the neonicotinoids, particularly in water and temperature stress environment, which I will explain reasons for a little later. What I present to you today are the outcome of the first objective, the first part of the first one, actually, spider mite abundance on thiamethoxam-treated cotton in a greenhouse, that is, in a relative absence of natural animals. And here are my two players, Tetranychus shoni and the egg here. And as you can see, the plants that have a significant abundance of the spider mites show the stippling and discoloration of the plants. I never saw anything as bad as the previous speakers, because my plants never, you know, I never kept them as long, but it was pretty impressive. I've never seen that before. So to do this, I established a colony of two spotted spider mites that are maintained on a constant temperature and light regime. And I got my cotton seeds from Monsanto and potted them in 4-inch pots. I got the cruiser and untreated check. I moved 40 females onto 4-week-old plants and did this experiment twice. First one was replicated 11 times and ran for 4 weeks, and the other one was replicated 7 times and ran for 2 weeks. And I compared the abundance by sampling 3 most terminal fully expanded leaves and used the number of mites or eggs per centimeter square as a dependent variable for analysis. And this is what I found after 4 weeks. On the y-axis here, number per centimeter, and eggs right here, and the 2 mite bars right here. The cruiser plants are gray bars, and untreated again are black. After 4 weeks, I saw a trend for higher egg number on the plants treated with thiamethoxam, but it wasn't significant. Whereas the spider mites, which is just lumped mobile stages, immatures and matures together, were significantly greater on the cotton treated with the thiamethoxam insecticide. Because after 4 weeks, I've noticed that the plants, the cruiser plants, were really beat up. It seemed like the population basically took off and depleted resources, and that's what I thought I missed a little bit with the eggs here. So I decided to cut this experiment off at 2 weeks. This is the second experiment, and that's where I caught the differences in the egg. Basically, the population was on the increase, and I found significant results for my egg numbers. So this was a very good day, by the way, when I got these results. I saw this with imidacloprid when I was doing my research on trees and shrubs, and then I come to cotton, and basically the same thing happens. So what is it about these pesticides that makes the plants so vulnerable to spider mites? Much more research has been done with imidacloprid. It's been around a little longer. And there's evidence for greater leaf area, chlorophyll index in roses, for example, increased growth rate in poplar trees, increase in number of leaves in poplar and burning bush. And I also found a study that showed improved grapevine vigor for both imidacloprid and thiamethoxam. But I also found this really important, interesting study on cotton. Gonias and others in 2006 found increase in photosynthesis rate in cotton. And this was especially interesting because they found that cotton plants treated with imidacloprid, they were kept in high temperature regime, produced less of an enzyme involved in plant stress response. So it seems that those plants that receive imidacloprid don't perceive those environments as stressful. They don't produce an enzyme to fight it off. Because of this and everything that I did in the field and observations of dry, hot summers and high mite numbers, they're correlated with it, on imidacloprid-treated elms and boxwoods, I always wanted to do an experiment that would correlate the water stress, that would actually study interaction between the water stress and the pesticide and figure out how that affects plant leaf area. So I wanted to do this experiment, and it sort of happened on me a little earlier than I anticipated. I had 9 cruiser plants and 9 untreated plants in 4-inch pots kept in the same environment as I previously described, and they experienced 5 days of water deficiency that was manifested by significant wilting. And as you can imagine, I basically forgot to water them on Friday and came back to work on Monday. They were really looking not very happy. After a couple of weeks, I've noticed that there might be something there. So I took area of 5 terminal fully expanded leaves and used ImageJ to calculate the area, centimeters square, to compare differences. And this is what I found out. This was pretty remarkable, and that's what I actually saw in those plants when I looked at them. Leaf area here on the y-axis. The cruiser plants, the leaves of those plants were roughly twice the size of my untreated plants, which is pretty remarkable. Because this wasn't a well-designed experiment, of course, I went ahead and repeated it, just like I did before, except I included this more structured treatment. My water stress plants received 200 milliliters of water every 4th day, and the non-water stressed plants were watered until leaching. I don't, unfortunately, have a better quantification of water stress, and I'll talk about that a little later. So what I found out was not as exciting as previous slide, but this was also good information. Again, leaf area here. No water stress plants here, and water stress plants, Famotaxum is gray and untreated is black. What I actually saw in this experiment was that there was a significant effect of pesticide on leaf size. So the Thiamethoxam plants were larger than untreated plants, but I didn't find a significant interaction between the water and the pesticide treatment. It's close. It's almost there, but not really quite. So third time's a charm, I'm hoping. So to recap what I know already, what we know already, and what I learned so far, the mechanisms thought to promote these spartamite outbreaks, the first one that comes to mind, natural enemy elimination, when we spray, when we apply the pesticide, knocks out the natural enemies and the pest outbreaks. It's not actually conclusive because there's a good evidence in field studies that neonicotinoids have no effect on natural enemies. There's also evidence to the contrary, so there's both there. And a lot of lab studies show effect of natural enemy debilitation by the neonicotinoids. So the jury is still out on that mechanism. The second one, this idea of hormesis or hormolagosis, direct effect of pesticide on spider mite fecundity, is a little better supported. There is evidence coming from a few independent groups, my own research included, that when you expose spider mites to plants treated with the neonicotinoids, they tend to lay more eggs. When the plant is not included in experiments, so if you, for example, spray the spider mite with the insecticide and offer clean leaves, you don't see this evidence. So there's a clear suggestion that this effect is plant mediated. And then my personal favorite, changes in plant physiology. There's a lot of evidence that neonicotinoids affect plant growth and yield, actually, in that study with cotton by Gagnas and colleagues. And this is actually a very exciting lead to follow, I think. And then my own research showed that tomato plants that are treated with the pesticide show lower expression of two important proteins involved in plant defense. So there is a lot of evidence that suggests that the neonicotinoids actually interact with plant physiology in a way that could affect subsequent herbivory. So there's a lot of exciting research there will be coming out of this. We will continue our collaboration with Dr. Kearns and look at structure of arthropod communities between fields treated with Thiamethoxam and untreated. And I will continue, I will look at physiological and genetic changes in cotton treated with those pesticides. And with that, I'd like to acknowledge our funding sources and the entire Eubanks lab, and I'll take any questions. Oh, sorry. So have I been able to keep thrips out of our greenhouse? So actually, these experiments have been done in a rearing room that's inside our facility, and we have had a lot of trouble with thrips, definitely. But I have been lucky, and I've stayed away from everybody else in the lab who's had those problems, and I'm okay. Anything else? No, I haven't, and that's a very interesting route to go. Okay, thanks.